Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
As soon as that goes red. Right, Tim.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And this podcast focusing on an unbelievable weekend of World Cup quarterfinals. We will have a Premiership podcast in our feed, so hit subscribe and you'll get every episode. But thank you very much for listening. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, we're on Acast, we're on Spotify, we're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Tell your mates, and like I say, subscribe. That's JB over there.
Hello, Timothy.
Philip is there.
Hello, Tim.
just have a moment.
Everyone settle down.
Yeah.
Settle down.
Wow. I'd love to see the graph of my heart rate on my little...
Well, you can actually do it.
I've got a Garmin phone. I might actually do that. I'd be fascinated to know what it was, particularly in the last 10 minutes of that Wales-France game.
I would hate to see mine. I was on edge.
Because you had a big bet on, didn't you?
I did.
You did.
£10, £400.
What ended up being quite a big bet?
An acca.
Little accumulated on the four World Cup quarterfinals, which was then significantly boosted by predicting that Bristol would beat Bath by more than 13 points, which they did, and that Saints would beat Saracens.
Oof. That was 6-1.
Oof.
Yeah.
How was that 6-1?
I couldn't believe that was 6-1.
Madness. And so if I'd known it was 6-1, I would definitely have gone for Northampton. Mm.
So you did in the
last predictions. I didn't put my money on Bristol just to beat Bath. Yeah.
So as it stood this morning, I was lined up to win £460. On a £10 bet, if only the two heavy favourites, Wales and South Africa, ease past their opponents. So my heart rate this morning was all over the place.
I was wondering why you were so keen for South Africa to win. It all became clear.
Of course, if you want to lay a bet yourself, then do so with our friends at Betfair.
What a good idea.
What a great idea. Great. Betfair.co.uk. And you'll see on their Twitter channel and on their website and stuff, there are articles that JB and myself are putting up with regularity before every Wales and England game.
Handwritten.
Which means we have to do another one because both England and Wales are in, I suppose. And I want to start with this big question on the podcast. Who will win the third, fourth place playoff between England and Wales?
That's a great question. I mean, it's such a weird stage of the World Cup now because everyone knows they've got to stay there till the end. Yep. Regardless of what happens, you're in it for the long haul now.
Two more games for everyone.
Which Bruce Craig and Nigel Ray are devastated about.
They're very, very upset about. Particularly after this week's results, but we'll talk about them later. So where did everyone watch the England game? Because that was the first one on the...
I can't remember now. That was the first one.
It was 8:15 Saturday morning.
Oh, I had military precision. I watched the first half at home. Mm-hmm. Then at half time, I timed it so that it would be about the right window of time to get Connie to gymnastics. Then sit in the car, watch the second half on my phone.
Your phone.
Oh, God.
So I did that.
I was just at home. Me and young Thomas thoroughly enjoyed the game.
And that first 5 minutes made me think, oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I completely agree. I thought Australia came out the blocks strong.
We said it in our preview pod on Thursday. They had to, and they did. They came out all guns blazing.
Karevi was a beast.
Yeah.
Karevi is
a beast. He's an absolute beast. But everyone carried that first phase. They controlled the game. They controlled the ball really well. They worked wide. They weren't narrow. they got the opportunity. I mean, Patea almost went in. Mm. That was his best moment of the whole game.
And maybe his only moment, frankly.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. But I thought that... I was nervous while it was happening. And then when England kind of weathered the storm, I thought, maybe that's okay. Maybe that we've just seen about all that Australia can possibly throw at us and we can hold it. And it did transpire that it was a game where Australia consistently, for 70% of the match, threw everything they had at England. And for the majority of it, England absorbed it phenomenally.
England's defence is immense. The scramble. Yeah. It's very much, when you go back 10 years, it's what we always used to say about New Zealand, their scramble defence. How do they manage to get numbers back?
Yeah.
And England are doing it, South Africa are doing it, Wales are doing it. So the last four teams are so hard to break down.
Yeah, in England, the big weakness came, the Corabetti try that stood. Mm. It came from creating an overlap on the outside. So
Slade early flew board, up,
go
didn't he?
Go wide. Slade flew up, and then Watson was forced to pick a man, and he picked the man, and it went back inside, and Slade wasn't quite there. He hadn't made it back into position after flying up. So that's New Zealand will be looking at that as an option. First phase ball, look to get round the outside with fullback coming round and winger coming round, and options out there.
You also wonder, the other thing New Zealand did a lot over the weekend, which when you look in the context of England, when Australia did have a bit of joy, New Zealand with these crossfield kicks and just kind of mixing it up, you kind of think, England are going to have to really watch out.
Yeah, you have to be on your toes so much with New Zealand because, I mean, the New Zealand performance, I'm sure we'll get onto all the performances properly, but that was one of the most complete performances I've seen in the World Cup and for a long time.
Crikey.
Admittedly, so Ireland did look impotent, but it was so unbelievably dominant.
Is that a pun? They're impotent because Ireland can't reach a semi.
That's boys.
they weren't they? Anyway, on to England.
England, yes.
So, interesting, I was watching the new... like after the Sunday Premiership game, BT Sport are now doing a GP tonight. So just having a chit chat, dissecting everything that's gone on at the weekend.
Kind of like Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast in a way.
It does a little bit, doesn't it?
A little bit.
That's all right. There's space for all of us.
Exactly.
And Hugo Monier said that Australia's was one of the, and he said, and I quote, "one of the most selfish tactical game plans that I've seen. It was headless rugby. I was watching and thinking, what are you doing?" He didn't pull his punches on Michael Checker. He laid Australia being poor at Checker's feet, saying that he completely ripped up the book of what Australia had done before, selfishly, is what he said.
But what does he mean by that? By what they've done before? I mean, I don't really get that. I mean, what, historically, as Australian teams, what Michael Checker's done before, what the players have done before? I mean, what does that mean?
Well, so it worked, but my point is it worked for 5-10 minutes. But I think Hugo's point was that Australia were picked in a kid, were attacking from everywhere and just going wide early.
Yeah.
And that actually a good team like England just destroyed them because they tried that.
So I wouldn't put the blame, certainly not solely on Checker's feet, because I actually think Australia, in that first half, when they were in the game, they played more how they would want to play. So they weren't trying to run everything from everywhere in that first half. But what happened and where they found themselves was they had the vast majority of territory, vast majority of possession, and kept on getting these opportunities and kept on getting thwarted by England. And actually,
they kept on turning down points.
Well, that was the big change. So the big change happened around 50, 55 minutes. They had two kickable penalties.
Yeah.
They were only, at that stage, 10 points down.
I know.
And they turned down penalties. And that was
it. Wild, this does.
But I can't see that being a coach's decision from the sideline. That is a captain's decision on the field.
Yeah.
And it was only after that that they started trying to run things from their 22.
Have I told you the story that Tom Wood told me on Rugby Dungeon?
I think I listened to that Rugby Dungeon, but So he, remind me.
So I asked him the question, who makes the decision to kick? Is it the captain or is it the coaches? He goes, well, sometimes it's the captain, sometimes it's coaches. It depends. But I've been, and now you have to re-listen to it. Again, paraphrasing, but something like, I've been on the field and the captain said one thing, and then before you know it, there's a buggy running on, like with the tee. So, oh, guess I'm kicking then. Because as soon as the tee comes on, you've got to kick it.
Yeah.
Mm. So, you know, you'd thought Jacko would have some say in it. But if you wanted it, you could just send the tee on.
Yeah, exactly. This is the opposite scenario to that one.
Know, and the thing about Jacko is he can certainly throw things. You know, it's not beyond his capability.
Just a stack of kicking tees by his side.
you idiots!
Yeah, so that... I think it's harsh on Checker to suggest that from the off, because I think against most other defences, that tactic would have worked. It took a remarkable defensive effort from England repeatedly to keep Australia out.
I mean, there are ways you can map out a way, can't you, that England don't win this, or at least it's more competitive. The second Johnny May try was just one of those things, like, it wasn't really a skill error. It was a skill error. It wasn't really that much pressure. You'd expect a professional rugby player to pull that off before you know it.
Which one was the second one? Was that the Slade kick through?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was a
Pocock. I mean, that was a brilliant bit of skill anyway. Pocock, that's
it was,
right.
It was a Pocock carries after, like, second phase. So it's not, they're not stretched. No. They're not out on their feet. Second phase, a basic mistake that is turned by a brilliant bit of skill and opportunism by Slade to take the ball, make the 30, 40 yards, realise he's not got the gas, but he knows a man who can.
There's nothing I love more than the immediate explosion of emotion from Johnny May once he scored. when they show that in slow motion, he's amazing.
He's such a one-trick pony, but his trick is so good.
Oh,
yeah, so it is an amazing trick.
His attacking trick, I actually think... Like, his defence...
Yeah, he's come on a lot.
Yeah, he really can.
His aerial skills now as well.
I would say now he is consistently world-class.
Yeah.
As before, when you first said it, he consistently was not world-class.
He was consistently inconsistent.
Yes.
When that was...
He was semi-consistent world-class.
Yes.
Yeah, he was good. I tell you what, the other wing was interesting. It looked to me as if Corabetti and Anthony Watson just frightened the life out of each other.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't sure which one was better. They were kind of a bit tentative. Both... Like when Anthony Watson had the ball in hand, Corabetti looked like, you know, like saw a ghost. Like, he's just absolutely terrified. But likewise, when Corabetti had the ball, Anthony Watson was in no better state whatsoever.
Good luck stopping Corabetti when he's got the ball.
Although, I was just thinking about Johnny May. One thing I've not seen Johnny May do for a long time
is the
50 meter sideways. Yes. Carry. But Corabetti was doing that all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think. Genuinely, I think that's something that Eddie and Wisemantle have trained out of Johnny May for the better.
Do you know what gets me about Anthony Watson, just on the wingers, right? There seems to be so much more to come from him, and it never, ever comes.
He has had, in this World Cup, very limited opportunities.
But what I mean, like, he gets the ball, and he does lots of little steps. You think, just run.
Oh, his footwork. Some of his footwork was immense.
Some of his footwork was amazing, but to where? I mean, I want him to use his footwork precisely... Open up a bit of the hole and go. And if there's no hole and you don't like to open one up, just go.
Well, so think about where Australia had joy. At no point was an England winger at fault to do anything wrong.
Oh, no, they were both very good. I just want...
Yeah.
I just want more.
And that's actually what I think. When you actually look at the breaches were through the centre and sometimes it was Daly not quite being in the right position.
Yeah, Karevi had his way basically at will throughout midfield.
Karevi was very good.
But when he was tracking... Do you notice how slow he was trying to chase Johnny May? I mean, Johnny May's a slow man.
He caught, or would have caught, Slade and then had to move on across to Johnny May.
You know how rapid Daly is? Corabetti just left him.
Yeah.
He did, actually.
And twice, because of the disallowed try, which, thank God, Ben Skeen didn't get to... Allow that try.
Well, that's the one loser out of this whole game. Ben Skeen didn't get nearly as much time on screen as he wanted.
Poor Ben Skeen.
Which was good from Garson.
Oh, that was awesome. That was my favourite thing of the whole match.
Yeah.
No obvious forward pass. Ben, it's an obvious forward pass.
Yeah. He stood a yard in front of him. The ball travels forward.
It's not about you. Ben, it's not about you.
So there was that. But also, I partly put that down to the fact that You talk about World Rugby's law changes, they wanted to change behaviour. England have been the most disciplined side when it comes to tackling.
They have.
That you can see their tackle height. They have really adapted.
It is.
They have to.
I know,
but a lot of countries haven't to this extent. And I'm saying England have taken it on board more than any other.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's a good example to show it is a coachable skill. Courtney Laws is 6 foot seven and a phenomenally powerful man. He's tackling as he
But he's always hit the elbow tackle, someone very, as he very always coolly has. called it. So, yeah, he's always been quite low.
But what one,
He has always. But it's more of a coachable skill than some people occasionally suggest it is.
One thing we've seen a lot of as well is, as a consequence, and it might almost be something that gets coached, is if you coach at the height of, like, aim for elbows or arms where the ball is, there's been a lot of tackles this World Cup.
Spill it.
Dislodged with a shoulder onto the ball.
Yes. But, and part of that is the conditions, the humidity as well.
Have you been coached to do that? Target the ball with your head?
No, not with my head.
Yeah. I have.
I remember
you've been coached.
Yeah,
aim at the ball with your head.
Yeah, basically, so the ball's then, you know, depending on what side it is, I was like, this is ludicrous.
I remember being a kid and getting, so I was playing a bit of rugby league and getting taught for the twos up tackles in rugby league to stop the offload. So you
one low, one high,
and as soon as the first man goes,
I got
low,
taught that in union. In rugby league, they do this. Let's practice this.
Yeah, one man go, the first man go low. But if the first man doesn't bring the man to deck immediately, the second man has got to go high and wrap up to stop the
offload. Another cool drill, which is very similar to that, which is you're playing touch, except for when you make the touch, two guys have to come in and lift the guy who you touch. Does that make sense? So you can't carry on playing until you've lifted the guy up.
What, as a, like a line-out lifter?
No, you just run into him.
Pick him off the ground.
Like, hooks and handles, me and you, tackled him, touch, but then we've got to go and we've got to lift him off the ground. Little rugby league thing. It's quite a good little game, that.
Yeah.
So I put this win down to four coaches. I'm going to say Eddie Jones first and foremost. It doesn't sound like I'm knocking at Eddie Jones, but there's three other coaches that I
You still got to tell us why it's bad news for England that they're in a World Cup semi-final.
Oh,
and by hammering Australia.
I think it might be bad news for England, the semi-final. But
yes, agreed.
Go on,
so, I think the first coach we've got to thank is Rob Baxter, because Rob Baxter has poisoned the well and truly for every other rugby team on earth by Exeter Chiefs not taking points.
I thought you were going to say because so many players now have abandoned all hair on the side of their head.
Yes,
started at Exeter.
And it most certainly did. So that sort of infected captains up and down the land, and we'll talk more about not taking your kicks later, which is really quite a sore point. But yeah, if Australia had taken their kicks, much, much, much better. Second of all is going to be Hansen. Because he came up with this ridiculous notion that everyone needs a Milner Scudder. By the way, who's his Milner Scudder this year?
It's the Bridge.
The Bridge.
Maybe?
Bridge is similar. And Severis. There was a number six who had like two caps who got called up and then also got dropped because he got injured for the entire tournament. I can't remember his name for the life of me. But
yeah, him.
Him.
Well, the answer is they don't really have one in the mould of Milner Scudder last time round.
But everyone's probably a good shout.
Everyone's desperate for him, which is why they played Jordan Patea, who did one thing, maybe. And then the last one, of course, is Warren Gatland. You need to thank him. Because one of England's best players, I thought he had a remarkable game, was Kyle Sinclair. I thought Kyle Sinclair was on top of that scrummage pretty much all game. And the only time he gave away a penalty was when the Australians had to really cheat and deceive the ref.
So you mentioned this deceiving the ref on WhatsApp. So this was the scrum where Australia got a penalty towards the end of the first half.
Is this the one where he shouted over to Roman on the sideline?
Yeah. Shouted, Roman! Yeah. Roman!
So he knows what's going on. And the referee is on the other side. And you see the Australian prop, Seo. He is so overmatched that he's either hinging his hips or at one point, you know, you see his band go high, and then you can see it squeeze in, and in turning in, and that's when they gave the penalty against Sinclair. The reason he did that, he's so desperate because Sinclair is so much stronger. And after that, Sinclair just had his way. And the way I describe it is, if you're an American football team and you score a touchdown because you're using a trick play, the other coach will think, well, you've got nothing left. That's why you've got to use your trick plays. And that's where that's where Sear was. He was absolutely screwed.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, though, because at that point when that was happening, I was thinking, oh, God. Oh, no, he's about to lose his head.
Yeah, well...
And I think...
And it was happening on the head as well, weren't they?
And what really pleased me, because you could see, when they did the slow motion of him shouting Roman, you could see Maro had already grabbed him and was pulling him back.
Exactly, alarms going everywhere.
And I was thinking, oh, God. But that's what I found really interesting. The leaders in that England team managed him brilliantly. I saw Farrell do it a couple of times. I saw I saw various people like taking care of Sinclair. But what was great was the second half response. He's shown that he is a couple of years on from.
Well,
he would have completely lost it a year ago.
So why is Warren Gatland to thank for this? Well, Warren Gatland has got an amazing talent of looking at players and thinking, you are an international grade player, even though we don't know it as, you know, the general public. Wainwright would be a great one. Thomas Francis, bloody hell, he's just gone and won.
Watkin as well.
Yeah, Watkin, he's gone and won a World Cup quarterfinal with Jake Ball at lock. And I actually think that the Kyle Sinclair we saw today, a lot of what he has, in a lot of ways that he's improved, has come from the confidence of getting picked by the Lions and being starting Test Lion. Because once you've got that reputation behind you, you just grow and grow and grow. And that's where Sinclair is. Sinclair is probably one of England's best players now.
He was certainly one of the best players on the park.
He was. Yeah. But I do love it that like you're almost... Eddie Jones needs to thank Warren.
Yeah, Sinclair needs to thank Warren. Sinclair needs... Because you know, I mean, games, you know, tours like the Lions tours, players.
I think it's important to point out the fact that a lot of journalists, a lot of fans, a lot of pundits, a lot of podcasters like us... even people who were very positive about England were had issues with Eddie Jones and the way that he was managing this England team when you look back a year, with justification as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to note that by whatever means, he has actually arrived...
As a World Cup semi.
At a World Cup. Well, no, but it's not just that he's got to a semi-final. That was the best England performance in...
Well, best,
what?
It's the best England performance at a World Cup since 2003.
Yes.
The best performance.
Exactly.
It's very tricky, isn't it? Because if you criticise him, it looks like you've just been a bit of an idiot.
Well, no, because he was criticised with justification a year ago.
So, I mean, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and just go with you guys and say it is the best performance and just leave it there. But if you wanted to, you could argue... Like I'm about to actually.
I thought you were going to leave it there.
Yeah. This might not be a great Australia team. Yeah,
it's an Australia team that beat the All Blacks.
Australia team that beat the All Blacks that pushed Wales really hard.
Yeah, but like Wales' record against Australia is nothing to shout about.
2-0 in the last two games.
Yeah, but in the World Cups, not so much. Yeah, 2-0. Just look at the historic rivalry.
Their last 13 games.
Yeah. But you know, I think at this point, it's probably just good practice to say England were very, very good.
Just on the coaches.
Yeah.
Just to add, I know you did kind of briefly say well done to Eddie Jones in your four coaches, John Mitchell and Scott Wisemantle. So England's both their attack, because they had so few opportunities and they were so clinical when they got those opportunities. That's credit to Wisemantle and the defence, John Mitchell. The defence worked tirelessly and superbly throughout virtually the whole game. They were only breached a handful of times, and even when they were, their scramble was superb. So those two coaches.
There's
do
been
need
no.
Credit.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
I will. Oh,
maybe John Mitchell is worth sacking all of those community coaches for. I mean, only time will tell.
What is noticeable about this World Cup? There hasn't been any stories of any whether it's behaviour, whether it's on dissatisfaction. When you see the players chatting, they seem relaxed, they seem happy, everything you hear is positive. And Eddie Jones, when he said they had that week off because the France game was cancelled, he went, oh, we're going to have a couple of days of downtime, then we'll get really stuck into
it. Did they have a couple of days of downtime, though?
I believe so. I think point is, I think a lot of the work has been done.
Yeah.
The real hard work. And actually, I also think the Japan factor has been huge with Eddie. He's his local knowledge has been massive.
Yeah,
friend of the show, Nick Heath. We bumped into him in a airport in where was it?
Fukuoka.
Yeah, and he says something really interesting. And I think there's probably something in this because he's got a little bit more insight, certainly than I have, which is if you're on the inside of that eddy bubble, it's really cool. Right? You know, you're starting to feel pretty bulletproof now because you've been through 4 years of hell. If you're on the outside of it, it's still hell and it still feels like it's a nasty place to be. But
would he have wanted you to have said that?
No, I think that's fine. Yeah. I think that's fine. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's a really good observation.
Yeah.
And you can see that with the people that come in, come in and out. So, I have a feeling that the players that are in there are pretty much having a good time now.
Coffee with the boys as well.
Coffee with the boys.
It was a very relaxed post-match press conference. I loved his response to being asked about, surely you feel vindicated for dropping George Ford. His response was,
brilliant.
I didn't drop him. I just changed his role. He had a very important role to play. We just played the role in a slightly different way. And maybe you need to catch up from the fact rugby's moved on in the last 30 years.
It's a 23-man game now.
It's a 23-man game now.
I really wish players understood that more. I really do. Because the bench is so important.
I think players understand it.
No, they don't. No, they do not. Believe you me. Like, if you get dropped from a starting 15... for whatever reason, and I know this because I was talking to a player only this weekend, and if you're not in that starting 15, it is still a dig. There is still a lot of pride in being a starter over a bench player, regardless of how much you massage their egos, which is a shame because I think bench players are so important now.
Bench players are really important. Yeah. And we'll come on to the South Africa game, but the fact that they could bring on a whole new world-class tight five,
amazing,
in a tight game, it shows the importance of I actually hate the word game changers because I think that's almost patronising, but I totally agree with Eddie's point, which is it is a 23-man game.
Yeah, it's like if he moved Farrell from 10 to 12, he's not dropped Farrell, he's literally just changed his role.
Yeah,
and a lot of the talk in the build-up to the England-Australia game was that is it a bit of a risk of Eddie to just change what has been working and go back with some combinations that might be undercooked, given injuries and stuff. But now, when you look ahead, going into New Zealand, it feels great knowing there are two different ways to play that have been tested at this World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still not confident about the New Zealand game.
Nope.
But I am very happy with the way things have worked out.
The biggest difference for me for England from their other impressive performances, and I include Scotland in this, okay? So when they battered Scotland for the first half.
For the first half, yeah.
That was impressive. Let's forget the second half. That was impressive. When they beat up the All Blacks, that was impressive. When they beat up Ireland, well, they actually won that game, so that is just impressive.
When they twice beat up Ireland.
Yeah.
Six Nations and warm-up.
I love all that bit. The big difference for me was how good they were at closing it off. I thought they're closing. When Australia don't want to kick points, Owen Farrell's like, points, go again. Ford comes on, starts kicking to the corners. And I thought that was probably the most impressive part.
I actually totally agree with that. I thought they were sensational in that game. And George Ford in that role, of, you mentioned it there, kicking corners and just the calmness and the control. Mm. We will make Australia play from their own 22.
Yeah.
And when that happens, Kirtley Beadle throws the intercept pass for Watson.
The two different textures I love, exactly as you say, the calmness and composure. And you can put Owen Farrell in that bracket as well. He seemed
very,
very calm.
For him.
Great. So you've got that calmness and composure in key positions, and then you have ferocity. Those kamikaze kids.
Oh
my goodness me.
I want to say this.
Michael Hooper was immense, and he was outplayed by both of England's kamikaze kids.
I think I might have mentioned this on the last podcast. I did. I think I might have said, I think they've got a substantial advantage.
No, you didn't. No, and no one disagreed with that. Yeah. You said they are world class.
No, I said they've got an advantage over their peers.
Yeah. My point to that was, and I said, yes, right now on form, the history and all the rest of it.
And I said, this is the stage when reputations are made.
Yes,
and after which you can say, make statements like that with certainty.
The last part of this jigsaw, which you're not going to mention, but I'm going to mention it now, is there's not just two of them. There's two of them, plus there's one in Sale, which looks very like one of them, but there's a fourth guy who has just come back from fitness, and my word.
Jack Willis.
If they can get Jack Willis in the mix.
But then,
like, sevens are... Sevens are to England what second rows are to South Africa. Like, they just grow on trees.
But look at the two in the squad who weren't started. So Ludlam came on and was brilliant and everywhere. And Wilson, who has not done very much in this World Cup because he's hardly been given a chance. When he has played, the 40 minutes he put in against USA, he was absolutely everywhere.
He's King of the North. You know, that's why he's royalty.
They have some serious, serious options there.
Yeah, it's exciting if you're a fan of back rows who play for England.
So, back rows is an interesting one. So there was a Russ Petty tweet today referencing an Eddie Jones interview from earlier this year where he said, when you play New Zealand, you've got to have a line-out specialty jumping back row.
Yeah, I can see that.
Now, does he then change things up and put Marrow into the back row, which is what he was, or what I would infer from his comment at that time, or does he stick with what he's got, which is three non-specialty jumpers? Certainly.
Yeah, so you look at Sam Underhill, I mean, I'm sure he can be lifted. I'm sure he can definitely do lifting.
He can do both. But
Curry's taken a fair few lineouts this World Cup.
Yeah, he has. Including taking some fine at the front. Billy's certainly not. I mean, Billy can jump, and those boys are strong enough to lift him.
I'm going to say something on Billy just briefly. So we're talking about the England back row. Anyone a little bit concerned about his form? How fit and firing he is?
Yes and no. So yes, because England used to be utterly reliant on him.
Yeah.
No, because
that's a fair point.
They seem to be.
That's a really fair point.
That's where I am as well, and I think there were games I remember going back at, a few years now. But I would look down the metres made from the England pack and Billy would be on 50 metres and the whole of the rest of the pack would be on less than 10.
Yeah.
The whole rest of the pack, including subs, would be on about 15 metres. And you're like, no, that is not, you cannot operate like that. Now, Billy is not making anywhere near the metres, but the pack as a whole is performing so much better.
Marrow played very.
The Sinclair try was a great example. It was a good line from Sinclair, but it was two other great lines from two other forwards, and it was Owen Farrell
just picking
absolutely beautiful pass.
Take it to the line, time it perfectly, pick the right option.
Yeah.
Now I will say this about England. They're bloody annoying. Like every time they win a scrum penalty,
Marrow's trademark clap.
And he started doing marching off from whatever ruck maul scrum. He just marched off with one hand in the air celebrating.
It's so annoying. I mean, it's not annoying if you're an England fan or if you're.
It's brilliant if you're an England fan.
You know,
everyone hates us anyway.
Yeah, the All Blacks will be watching that. Go right. That's stopping today. That's over.
Best players. We've mentioned a few, but
Curry.
Tom Curry, I thought, was unreal.
You've got to understand, right?
Unreal.
When you've been brought up in such a professional surrounding and had such intensely good coaching up until this point, you're going to be a good player. Ask Mark Wilson.
I thought Curry did win Man of the Match, hilariously, as your 17,000 retweets or
17,000 retweets.
Well, something ridiculous like number. 17,000 likes.
Why can't I get 17,000?
Several thousand. All I did was post a video that one of our mates put on our WhatsApp group.
Oh, is that what you did?
Yeah, and they got in the sun and everything today.
God damn it, Tim Cocker.
It's a great little. He puts his hand out to shake the hand of.
It's a bottle of wine, is it? They get as the Man of the Match, player of the match. It looked like a bottle of wine.
What was it? When you first started doing the interviews on BT Sport and you uncovered Merle or Cronkite, the stuff that they spray around at the Man of the Match for...
Yeah, so it's now a medal, but it used to be a bottle of champagne.
Was it champagne, though?
Yeah, it was like pomade or something like that. It wasn't a particularly nice vintage. When you take the as it was, Aviva wrap-off, it was a very mediocre bottle of Prosecco or something.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
What are you looking at, Phil?
I'm just trying to figure out what he's being handed with.
It looks like a bottle of wine to me.
It's a similar shape. I think it's actually just a little trophy thing, MasterCard.
Girl.
I think it's like it's the same shape but not size, roughly, as the Shard in London, only with a pinkish purpley tinge to it.
A hue.
Yeah, hue. Mm. Yes.
Yeah, but Tom Curry with it, holding his hand out to shake her hand, and obviously and he has like, that's not part of the Japanese custom. Just it's hilarious.
I can't remember if it is or not. I can't remember. No, I can't remember anything from Japan.
Handshaking is not a thing.
Right, enough time on England. We can come back to the semi-finals in a bit. Second quarter-final was
New Zealand
Ireland. Right. And, yeah, Ireland.
Allow me. Ireland, what a farce. What an absolute bunch of jokers. To go from the number one team in the world to this absolute shower, it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable in any way. And the one thing which made me really, really sad about this was watching Rory Best walk off. He deserved far better than what his teammates gave him. I think that performance was shameful. And that's not to say the All Blacks weren't amazing. They were. But it's your job as professional rugby players to stop that happening. The other person who needs to really carry the can on this is Joe Schmidt. He had the formula. They were playing well. He opened it up. And he lost his bottle. He had a bad Six Nations. He narrowed his team. He narrowed his style of play. And they got a hiding. And they deserved everything that they get. Because you can't go into an international rugby game, play like that, and expect to win anything.
There's something slightly bigger picture, though. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you in terms of the sentiment of what you're saying. But there's a bigger picture here, which is that a lot of those big players that were so crucial when they did beat New Zealand those two times. And I don't necessarily put this down to Joe Schmidt, but it for some reason, and there will be a reason, a lot of them haven't played well for a long time. Yeah. And there were green shoots, excuse the pun, there were some green shoots coming through during this World Cup when you thought, oh, Tadhg Furlong, he's playing a bit more like he was when he was atomising New Zealanders. And Johnny Sexton looked a little bit more like himself. Conor Murray looked a bit more like himself. But none of them, and so many of their big players, haven't been playing well for a long time.
Genuinely, one player played well in the first half, and that was Peter O'Mahony. And I just felt sorry for him because he was putting in one hell of a shift. Everything good Ireland did came through Peter O'Mahony. All the line-out wins came from him. He made a few steals. You can see him toiling, and you can see all of his mates just looking sorry for themselves. These formerly world-class players. The one which really got me, and it's these little small details which must make you just so angry as a fellow player. Ireland won a scrum free kick. Now, when you win a scrum free kick, usually the scrum half picks up the ball and throws it to the eight because the eight might just want to go quick and your carrier. CJ Stander stands up, turns his back and walks away. It's like you've got to look enthusiastic. At least pretend that you want to be there. And it was from start to finish, it was awful.
So I'll mention two other kind of big failures. And one, I thought Peter O'Mahony had a good game, but I think it was late on in the first half, Ireland get a penalty kick for the corner.
Yep. Oh, is this the penalty he gives away? Bad call.
Ireland have got a penalty because of, was it a high tackle?
Yep.
And then, I can't remember who's lying on the floor. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Someone's lying on the floor, but they're not affecting the ball, actually. And O'Mahony just flops on them with his shoulder.
I can see why he gives away.
So it's two penalties. There's a penalty against New Zealand and then a penalty against Ireland for what is... It's a brain-dead move by O'Mahony, that. Because it's so unnecessary to not attempt to bind and just flop on.
You can look at the other way, can't you? Which is they're the joint most successful Irish team ever to enter a World Cup. But it's still not good enough. And that was a bad call.
That was brain dead. The other one that summed up Ireland's performance in that first half, the first half that finished 22-0 to the All Blacks. I mean, by that point, it was over. But another penalty that Ireland won on about the halfway line, Sexton goes for real distance, and he would have had a line out on the 5 metre line, but it's not quite far enough. So Mwunga, an incredible bit of skill, his feet just inside, jumps out and taps it back.
That wasn't
and
bad
New
at
Zealand
all.
Can then play out, and that was the difference between had he taken even 5 yards or 10 yards off that kick and not gone for the absolute limit of his range, and have got an attacking line out. Still deep in New Zealand's 22.
It's only with hindsight you can look back and think, when we looked at the first game against Scotland, we thought, oh, it's the old Ireland, but Scotland were poor.
Yes, that is a real conclusion that has come out of this tournament.
I'm trying to find any sort of positive because it must be incredibly disappointing. And I'm sure most Ireland fans were thinking pre-World Cup, well, we're getting to the quarterfinals and then probably going out anyway. It was the manner of the defeat, I agree, that was poor. But if you can pull out any potential silver lining from that, is it that getting hammered like that gives Andy Farrell a bit of an easier time to, if he needs to, just try something a bit new? Do what Stuart Lancaster did a little bit and just get in a load of youngsters.
Yeah, I mean, the other element of this for me is, were there too many Lifetime Achievement Awards given out to Ireland? Was there too much... what do they call it when people get... there's a business term where people get so senior that no one questions them.
It's like the Peter Principle or whatever it is. Where you get promoted to a level of incompetent.
That,
yes.
Like, but there is a relation with that, but yeah, it's not that.
Yeah, it's like people are so senior, you daren't question them. And maybe people like Sexton should have been really questioned.
Too many chiefs, not enough Indians? Is it that? Yeah, too many cooks spoiling the broth?
Yeah, something like that.
The straw that stirs the drink.
Something. Just, if you add all of those cliches into one, you'll get to
where we'll get.
And I think, like, as soon as you had Corby on the field, things started to sharpen up a bit. And maybe they shouldn't have interested Johnny with... Or maybe there should have been a little bit more of a critical thought about selection. And maybe these guys have trained so well. I mean, Gatland was due to get rid of Dan Biggar, which to me is like heresy. I mean, I can't think of anything more stupid. But there again, that's why he's the best coach on the planet, probably, or up there with them. It's because he knows when to turn over the team. And this Ireland team, good like Fergie, a year ago.
Like Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, maybe they should have... and also, who is the next guy up? And that's the other thing they've got. I mean, Corbury, basically through sheer talent, is the next guy up. So he's almost forced his way. What about the next guy after Murray? Who is that guy? Because once Murray goes,
Jamieson Gidson Park, he's almost qualified on residency grounds. They'll have him in. Him and James Lowe, get him straight in.
Isaac Boss. I mean, who's next?
But we talked enough about Ireland, but we should mention that was the most complete performance I've seen since the last World Cup from any international rugby team.
Yeah, and I think
I would definitely echo that.
Yeah. And the last World Cup wasn't that good, so it might even be, at a World Cup, it might be the best performance since two World Cups ago of any team.
And even two World Cups ago, New Zealand almost lost it to a very poor France team.
I always feel that
was held up by Dusatoir and Aaron Ordicky and Camembert and delicious red wine.
Mm. I almost feel dirty for spending so much time talking about this match, reviewing this match, and talking about the men in green because they don't deserve it. I'm with you. That All Black performance was spectacular. And the reason it was spectacular was not because they came with some, never-before-seen game plan. It's because everything they did was so simple, yet so good. There was nothing special about it whatsoever, which makes it very, very special.
Yeah, and to do it in what we have seen are very difficult conditions in Japan, and to execute the game plan so effectively, and execute the balance you mentioned before about the crossfield kicks, but they're... strike moves through the centres, their wide strike moves to bring in Rees and Bowden Barrett and Bridge, and their tight five play, their forward play was just superb all round.
I've got a question for you, particularly about the backs. In fact, go with the whole team. I would say, outside of Bowden Barrett, there is not an all-time great All Black in there. Oh, Kieran Reid.
Ryan Crotty's on the bench. Let's just point that out.
He didn't make the bench.
Oh, no, he didn't even make the bench.
He's not in the 23.
Ryan Crotty, Sonny Bill, not in the 23.
Sonny Bill on the bench with
this isn't a knock on the team. In fact, if anything, it's a compliment to the team, which is the individuals are not the world-beating individuals that they used to have. Very good.
I would say the second row, Reed, the second rows, Bowden Barrett and Aaron Smith, probably.
Yeah, okay.
I'd look at it another way. There are guys not in their 23 that would start for every other team in the World Cup.
I think this is such...
Rico Ioane.
Yeah, Rico Ioane. Yeah. Julian Servais is not there.
Not even close to being there.
I mean, there's not like a guy, an era-defining guy like a Nonu or an Umanga.
A Carter.
I mean, these guys they're not the absolute best of the best All Blacks, but in a way it makes the team even better. Because they play so well together.
Yes, but they do have guys that have won two World Cups in their side.
Yes.
Which is what... We're only looking at Dan Carter and Richie McCaw and these other guys.
Richie McCaw's another one.
I mean, obviously, they're you know, legends, but we're only looking at those in hindsight. But Beauden Barrett's got a World Cup under his belt. Ben Smith's got two under his belt. Ryan Crotty's got World Cup under his belt.
Ben Smith, just one.
Just one. Oh, okay.
There's three in the squad.
And Sonny Bill.
Ben Smith even play? Sonny Bill.
Sonny Bill. Dane Coles? No. What am I talking about? Sonny Bill, Whitelock.
Yeah.
And easy Aaron one. Smith.
Nope.
Surveyor?
Nope.
Surveyor Jr. is not
Crotty.
No.
No. Not Crotty.
Crotty. Come on, the easiest one.
Oh, Kieran Reid.
Kieran Reid.
Of course. So they've got...
Yeah, he needs There's a mention. He was amazing.
He was amazing. Yeah.
And he wasn't even playing his normal game. It wasn't the Kieran Reid you remember from 5 years ago. This was like... this is a Kieran Reid who is now, rather than a ball player, a destroyer of worlds. What he did in defence was outstanding.
Kieran Reid... Because
he played like Jerome Kano.
Yeah, yes, he did. Because what I love Kieran Reid, but I thought he was falling off a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you just type in at Rugby Podcast Kieran Reid JB, you'll find the picture of the hover hand.
Too afraid to touch him.
JB had a picture of Kieran Reid in Chicago.
As soon as I touched his shoulder. He spun around and embraced me like a brother.
Yeah,
but sadly, Phil was taking
the picture. JB was stood on tiptoes to try and be as tall as Kieran.
He asked me for the picture. That's the weird thing.
And then put his hand around Kieran Reid, but didn't want to touch him, so it was hovering so close to his shoulder.
Kieran Reid, I have thought maybe he's not absolutely at his best. He isn't doing what he used to do, running the outside line in the 13 channel. But he was so, so good. His carrying in the tight was superb. His offloading in the game and off the deck. And his defence was sensational.
It was immense.
He was so, so good.
I can't wait to talk about the matchup between the two sides. But let's move on to quarterfinal number three. And
very quickly, because I think it was a question you asked before, I think, Jay, about where do Ireland go from here? And there are a handful of green shoots. Again, pardon the pun. I thought Joey Carberry was very good when he came off. Lama, as well, looked very good. And it's those kind of boys that you want to be bringing in and building the team round. So they have some options. And someone like Dan Levy, who was missed for this, is a young man.
Do you know who they
huge opportunity
desperately needed? And it wouldn't be the right person to pick because for the exact reasons that we just spoke about, you need to freshen up your team. But the person they would love to have bought off the bench would be someone like Sean O'Brien. Someone who can get over the gain line, someone who can make it.
And
the
big hits and massive work rate. That's, yeah,
They really missed a high-quality back row. Yeah. But the thing about coaching, particularly at international level, is I think a lot of people have the technical ability to do it. I think most club coaches have the ability to implement a line-out or a strike move. They all know it. The real talent comes knowing how to freshen up your team, knowing when, like Gatland dropping is what you'd assume were his first two props. Mm. And that's where I think Schmidt has really let himself down, on top of all the tactical stuff as well.
Next one.
Right, yeah, and this was so tense. So tense. And
I'm so angry about this.
it's amazing. JV would rather be right than his own team, his motherland, get through to a World Cup semi-final.
I would take being right 100% of the time rather than being wrong and have my team go through.
Well, I was wrong. Again, I'll say it again. Team. I was wrong in how right I was about Wales. You can go and listen to the Betfair podcast.
Please stop using that. That belongs to me.
You can listen to our podcast from the very start of the season.
If you start quoting Tim Cocker, quoting me, I don't know what I'll do.
You probably got it from Adam Carolla or something anyway. Yeah.
Dave Damashek.
Yeah.
So I said Wales will go further than any other Six Nations team, and they were 12-1. 14 or 16-1 to win the tournament before the tournament. And here Wales are in a World Cup semi-final against a South Africa team they can beat.
Let's get on to South Africa later. Just on this game, there is a value, isn't there, of staying in the fight. And that is exactly what Wales did. They didn't do any more.
It's not what they did, it's what Wales do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Think about the England game, which they won in Six Nations. That was exactly the same. They just stay in the fight. And you're like, why can't we possibly kill these guys?
What was the last?
Finish them off.
Yeah, when was the last time against real top opposition? I was trying to remember just a minute ago, as you were speaking, I was trying to think, what was the last time I saw Wales just cut someone to shreds and score hatfuls of tries and win by 30 points? It never happens. Never happens.
I'm just going to look at Wales' results for the past.
They even struggle to win over Georgia at home and games like that. It's just what Wales do. They are hard as nails.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I'm just having a look now. From what I can see, yeah, Dan Biggar did not miss a kick, which it just shows you how important it is. And it always feels like when you're watching Wales, that one of them or all of them are constantly, mapping a way to win. Like, if we just get 3 points here, it means that we can go back up the field and then we're in with a shot. If you watch that game and you didn't see the score, and I just gave you snippets here, there and everywhere, you'd say Wales are getting battered. I mean, this isn't a fair fight. Was it 3-2?
Yeah, and Wales could not control that breakdown at all. No. France were all over it.
Wales couldn't stop the offloading game. No. They couldn't stop them.
France had it.
Flooding through.
They had it. And now they don't. France looked really, 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 really good. Really good. And they threw it away. Well done, boys. Well done.
Yeah, that's the question. Percentage-wise, what was that France losing it and what was it Wales winning it?
Well, France get one of their kicks, just one of the three kicks, which they missed. It's a different story altogether. Now, maybe Wales adapt. Maybe Wales do something different to get themselves back in the fight. But that's not the scenario that we have. So the missed kicks are absolutely critical. And then the red card. But I'm not even sure the red card makes a difference.
I think it does make a difference.
It came from the scrimmage, didn't it? The last try.
Well, if only, yeah. So there's the scrimmage. Then, just before that scrimmage, 2-3 minutes before that scrimmage, France have an attacking scrum in Wales's 22. And France failed to put a number 8 in their attacking scrum.
What were they doing?
I mean, that is
what the were most, they thinking?
Most unbelievable basic schoolboy.
Even if you
error.
Put a Johnny May winger on the flank.
Yeah.
What? And they had Louis Picamole on. What were they thinking?
How do you make that mistake?
That's almost more brain dead than Vahamina elbowing Aaron Wainwright in the head.
It is equally brain dead in my mind.
Or
to do
more
those
brain
two
dead
things.
Than Vahamina against Wales, not knowing he was captain.
Yeah,
trying to throw
a 30-yard miss pass in the Six Nations
straight to George North. Yeah,
I mean the implosion of the French team. That was a true masterclass. In how to...
But it wasn't even an obvious implosion. It was like little cuts here and there. Maybe you get away with it against England or someone like that. You don't get away with it against Wales because they just take every opportunity.
But if it was, I think you're right to point out, if it wasn't for those two scrum error mistakes and not missing the two penalties and one conversion that were relatively easy, certainly kickable, France win. Like, there is...
Yeah, and I cannot understand that scrum, exactly their own scrum in Wales is 22. I cannot understand what they were thinking and how no one in that team, and it's not like it was a team full of kids.
Yeah.
It's like Louis Picamole. And
how is he not packing down at 8 in that scenario?
Where would he pack down, on second row?
He either packed down a second row or on the flank.
He packed down as one flank.
They put in two flankers.
With Olivon on the other.
Yeah.
It's unreal, that. That is it's so stupid.
So ball squirts out, they lose it.
I mean, there's so many amazing things about this game. Number one, Wales have no ball carriers. I have mentioned this many, many times. They have one semi-good ball carrier in Ross Moriarty.
On the bench.
Yeah, on the bench. And Ross Moriarty, is a good ball? Yeah, he's all right. He's all right, but he'd probably be, the ninth best carrier in South Africa. In the South African starting team.
Well, what is he? Maybe. Well, if he was at Gloucester, would he be the third best ball carrier in Gloucester?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Behind Ackerman and Morgan.
Ackerman, Morgan, and Pledry.
Fourth best ball carrier in Gloucester.
Yeah, so, you know, his
work rate is very
basically
good.
What I'm saying is he can carry a ball to an adequate Premiership standard, and he's the best ball carrier in Wales.
Yeah.
So they win this game without a ball carrier, which is amazing. God knows how they...
Without Faletau, and is the other little asterisk there.
Yeah, but,
true.
You know, Faletau needs to play.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
So they've got, like, they've got the three sevens. Jake Ball played this game. Jake Ball. Obviously, Alan Wynn's an absolute hero. So you look at to the Welsh bench... And who's going to come on and win this game for you? Rhys Carey? Or Carey? I don't know. I don't even know how to say his name.
Carey.
And yet they still somehow did it. I think Hadley Parks is hugely overrated.
So he had a bad game.
He's had a bad World Cup.
After having a great Six Nations.
Yeah, now, I called him man of the match for this because he played so badly in the last game. I said he always comes back and has a man of the match performance.
So what he does well is he doesn't make mistakes. But what we're looking at basically is... a large scaffolder type guy.
you love comparing the Welsh team to scaffolders.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of... What is he, 6'2"? Kind of athletic, not overly. He catches the ball and doesn't really let it go, despite being absolutely battered. It's sort of like he's just this magnet for punishment. I mean, the amount of the amount of hidings that he's had against Fiji and France now, it is painful to watch him play. Because he looks like he's running through treacle, as you'd like to say, and then he just gets slammed by massive men. But he doesn't drop the ball. What Wales would give for a Jamie Roberts just to get over the game line? I mean, they could literally give him a call if they wanted.
Yeah, he's like a...
I don't know how he does it.
He's like a professional sparring partner for boxers.
That's exactly what he is.
Just there.
He's cannon fodder. Yeah. Now, he's better... Now, this doesn't mean I don't like him. If anything, it makes me like him even more. I mean, he's such a brave bloke. After two or three of those hits, I'm retiring.
But he's always dreamed of pulling on the red Welsh shirt.
When he was a small child growing up in what, Swansea or Cardiff, was it? Or what?
Somewhere.
Christchurch? Oh, okay, fine.
What's happened to Jonathan Davis, by the way?
Don't know. That's important, though.
Yeah.
And we can mention that when we talk about...
He was picked for the game, wasn't he?
He was picked and then dropped out.
Yes, I think it's a knee injury he had.
Yeah.
I think it's like that had flared up slightly. So that is one to watch. And what were you mentioning on our WhatsApp group about Johnny May and his hamstring?
Oh, it's a good point. So he got taken off. So England finished the game with 14 men. He got taken off. It was then... So I've seen nothing about
this. Yeah, and I can't believe... Any good reporter post-match, I'm sure it was said in a post-match press conference. If no one asked him, they didn't do their job. Okay,
so
they did.
What are you supposed to ask in a post-match press conference?
How was Johnny?
Well, Johnny May went off injured. You know, what's the prognosis? Will he be back? And then if they straight bat it, will he be back? Will he be available next week?
Is there a list of good questions to ask in a post-match? Because obviously I'm not a professional at this in any way. But I end up asking questions in a post-match. Are there key questions that you should always ask?
No.
Yeah.
Just as long as they're open-ended, so it's not... You're asking an open question.
Good.
Then it doesn't really matter.
Good.
Because then if you ask an open question, it doesn't matter what the question is because you can listen and follow up on what they say. Or follow up on what they don't say.
Hmm. So just on the Johnny May, the only news I've seen, and I have been actively searching for this because I'm a little bit worried about Johnny May for next week, is it was asked in the press conference about 8 or 10 minutes into it, and Eddie Jones did straight bat it and just said, "I was just a niggle. We took him off as a precaution."
Okay, good.
That's it.
Good. Hopefully, JD is the same.
Truthful that is from Eddie Jones.
Hadley Parks is 6'1", 6'1", 101 kilograms,
big boy,
and he's getting beaten up.
Is he?
He's a
16 stone, 6'1". Yeah, like 16 stone of like functional mass is a big boy.
I mean, I would say Sam Burgess is a big boy.
Sam Burgess is a big boy.
Or Jamie Roberts is a big boy. Or Owen Watkin is a big boy.
How big is Owen Watkin?
Owen Watkin's at least 6'3", I'd guess. I bet he's not now. I bet he's like 5'9" or something.
He's definitely not 5'9". 6'2" and 100 kg from what I've got.
Yes, so, same.
Very, very similar size to...
Pure 16 stone of pure functional mass is pretty hefty.
Maybe. Again, no Jamie Roberts. I tell you who was outstanding today. Gael Ficou. I've not seen him play so well.
And Vakatar. Oh, Vaca Tower was, I think he was the best man on the pitch.
Yeah. Grew up in Toulouse or Paris or whatever, dreaming of pulling on that French jersey.
Vaca Tower and Wainwright, for me, were the best two men on the pitch.
I've told you the coffin story about Vaca Tower.
The what story?
The coffin story.
Possibly, but refresh my memory.
So the story about Vaca Tower is, well, I'd say nice. It wasn't nice for him at the time. His mum died. And he put the French jersey on her coffin and played for France again.
Yes, that's right. And Nick Mullin said that in commentary, or someone said that in commentary. What was I going to say? The person that I think of when I look at Aaron Wainwright, you know, on Twitter or whatever, or when you click on the, you know, these GIFs that you can select and put on. There's a GIF of someone with blonde hair and a blonde moustache who mouths, "What the F?"
No, I have never.
I guarantee people, I guarantee there will be people listening right now. Hopefully, you listening that will know exactly what I'm talking about. There's a what the F? There's a WTF meme of this.
I've just found it.
Of this blonde guy.
That one.
Yeah.
That's it. In like a blonde that guy, a blonde wig and a moustache.
But I see that meme so often.
Download that
and I just think about Aaron Wainwright.
Yeah, he's turning into a pretty good player.
He's all right.
He was very, very good.
And where does he play? The Dragons.
Yeah.
The Dragons.
Mm. He's only been playing rugby for 4 years.
No.
That's insane.
Yes.
That is insane.
Why was I so bad at rugby? Why was I so horrifically bad at this sport? Oh, never mind.
Wales. They really snuck through. Really. God.
Yeah, I think that... I think Wales actually are pretty well equipped to...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's Amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Go well against South Africa. Not to win it, but to go well. I think they'll have some cunning plan to somehow play South Africa with smaller men, less ball carrying, a weaker scrum, and somehow show up. That's just my feeling.
Well, let's jump onto South Africa, Japan then, because I think the characteristic that defines Wales and South Africa is defence.
Yep.
And we talk a lot about the incredible attacking players that South Africa have got in their back three, the danger at nine, and how massive and powerful their pack is, all of which are true, but their defence is their best quality.
And
it's mega.
In that first half particularly, their scramble defence when they got breached multiple times by Japan to get back time and time again and not concede a try, that was... Because they did not play well in that first half.
No.
They butchered a few chances. They had so many handling errors. They gave away stupid penalties. And they conceded a lot of territory in possession, but they did not concede a try against such a potent attacking force as Japan.
They've conceded three tries in this World Cup, two of them against New Zealand in the space of, what, 2 minutes?
Four minutes. Yeah.
Canada.
Wow.
So I think you're right to point that out, Phil, because to keep Japan tryless
is
massive.
The team that they remind me of most is the All Blacks. The All Blacks just seems to do exactly the same as they do, but better, really.
With a bigger pack.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this before. If you were to rank the handling ability, and certainly based on the performances this weekend of the teams, the last eight, you would go Japan's handling ability, number one.
Yeah.
Then New Zealand.
Yeah.
I would then rank England.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by Australia. Followed by France,
mm-hmm.
followed then by South Africa, just followed by Wales, with Ireland dead last.
Yeah, I would swap the top two, but the rest of them, you can have that. I still think New Zealand have the advantage over Japan, even in, even with how good they are at handling. New Zealand are just the best. They just are. It's interesting. It was definitely the most exciting 5-3 game I've seen up until half time.
It was.
Really was.
So exciting. And at half time, when at this stage, my 460 quid just rests on this one result, and South Africa repeatedly get themselves into great positions. They blew, Am and Mapimpi blew a 2-on-1.
Oh.
He takes contact and tries to offload out the back straight to the floor.
Dialande, just let them go with the ball.
Yeah.
Pick it up again. Yeah. That simple.
You will crash over the line if you just crash and recycle the ball.
Yeah.
But that happened not just those two. It happened 3 or 4 times, and Japan looks so, so dangerous. And Kenki Fukioka, when he steps inside and then outside Colby, was just amazing.
Why is he going to stop to be a doctor? Someone needs to have a real, real good chat with him. Like, go to France, just get a couple of £100,000 more, then become a doctor.
Yeah, do another 3-4 years.
You can become a doctor whenever you want, and it's not even that hard.
What was very noticeable about South Africa, again, touching on their defence, that Japan and Ireland, that Scotland and Ireland couldn't manage, is that when South Africa kept the ball, put the ball behind Japan and said, go on then, attack us, Japan, yes, they attacked with a lot of guile, a lot of skill, but they couldn't get out.
Particularly second half.
South Africa made Japan kick.
Yeah.
First time in the World Cup, which...
Yeah, I didn't like that at all when he started kicking.
But they couldn't run it out.
Yeah, particularly second half.
Japan
were... They'd thrown everything they could. South Africa had absorbed it. I'll tell you one thing that I love about the South African defence is the way that they use Faf de Klerk.
Yeah.
So they
Faffy.
As a flyer.
So he seems to have this kind of free role where he will track along the back and he will then spot, he'll try and analyse and look for, right, 13 channels getting the ball, and he will just fly and cut off. But because he's not really part of the defensive line, he pops up where he wants. There's no gap behind him. And he does it. He does it so, so well. He picks the danger man.
The other way to look at this is: why would you want Faf de Klerk in your defensive line?
He's a good defender.
No. He's a great defender. Don't get me wrong, at what he does. But you wouldn't want Faf de Klerk in your defensive line.
Well, scrum halves are normally sweepers aren't they?
Ruck. If you put him in your defensive line between, like, I don't know, Mostar and Etzebeth, it's quite clear where the attacker's going to go. Yeah,
but scrum halves don't ordinarily occupy that position. They normally stand in a sweeper position behind the ruck. But I think South Africa have just expanded on that. He has.
Well, he's sweeping, isn't he? And then he's
and then
through.
He picks. Yeah, he sweeps and then he picks, but then he blitzes. So, and he's almost not tied to the rest of the defence. So what the rest of the defence do is it totally irrelevant to what he does.
So the role that you'd look at for him would be something like an American football free safety. As in, you know, you've got freedom to roam, and then when it's on, you make your own decision and come through the line. I think it's quite smart. And that is a nice little analogy to lead me into why I think Japan stuttered and then ultimately stumbled, which was their attack is, to go back to NFL, it's a bit like a really well-timed West Coast offense, little dinks and dunks, and it's all based on the timing. I think once South Africa's just started rattling people and people started to get a little bit fatigued, they couldn't run the lines. And when you can't run your lines and you know they don't have multiple options, that's why they had to kick. And then you're playing a sort of Northern Hemisphere or a Tier 1 bludgeoning type rugby, and they're never going to beat South Africa or England or Wales or anyone if you're trying to beat them at that game.
Well, I'll flip it around and say that Japan actually kept South Africa to a lot less points than I think a lot of other top countries would have done.
Yes, because you'd be playing South Africa at their own game. Because at least Japan show up with something new to offer.
Their defence was still heroic. It was a step too far.
The problem I had with Japan going into this game is I don't think they had any sort of defence around the ruck, so they had no threat to turn over, and therefore you've got these big South Africans running at you over and over again. Their set piece is actually remarkably good at times. I mean, I think they won one against the head.
Their line out did struggle though.
Yes,
their line out got picked off.
The scrum was not too bad. It was just a step too far. But look, beating South Africa might be a step too far for everyone in this World Cup except for the All Blacks.
Yeah,
so
potentially.
No, absolutely no shame.
Yeah, no shame at all. It's a hell of a tournament for Japan overall.
So how do you want to do this, guys? Do you want to do a podcast later in the week when we know the teams and do a very short little look at the semi-finals now?
Well, let's just do, very quick, who's going to win, and then we can finish it off.
Yeah. When we get the teams and stuff, when we're a bit close to time, we'll do
62% lineout successful.
Yeah. For Japan. Not good. Oh,
although 100% goal kicking success, so that's good, isn't it?
One attempt.
one from one. Yeah. The goal kicking, you're just on that.
Do you know what I said about the rucks? Just looking at the stats here, South Africa had 100% ruck success. So I wasn't just right, I was really right. I couldn't be more right.
Really, really right.
Really correct there.
So just on the goal kicking, because that will get more and more important it does get more and more important towards the end. Wales, 100%. England, 100%. I mean, Farrell, 8 from 8, including a couple from the touchline.
He's terrible, isn't he, JB?
Well, he didn't have a head injury, did he? So,
New Zealand, 62%. They missed a few. I think they missed three conversions. And maybe a penalty. You know,
it's just dawned on me that if England win this, if England beat the All Blacks, they'll have to move into the mountains, aren't they?
Well, they've already. Do you not think a World Cup semi-final is? They've already defied your.
Oh yeah,
they've defied your downfall.
Yeah, look,
by a long chalk.
I'm not going to criticise like England today because it is their day. There'll be more time for that. We will discuss it another time. You know, there have been harder routes to a World Cup semi-final than this one, I will say. Right.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Like New Zealand? I think if England beat New Zealand...
No, World Cup semi.
To the semi, yeah. Ireland's route was arguably harder.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's lots of harder routes, isn't there? Lots of harder routes.
France's route in 2015 was harder.
Yep.
Getting hammered 60-odd 10 by New Zealand.
Well, England would have got to a quarter-final... regardless of a result against France. So they were still in a group that everyone was saying, I think pre-World Cup...
If they were in Ireland's group and they're coming out against France or New Zealand, I mean, that's a bloody hard group.
Pre-World Cup, people were saying that England were in the toughest pool.
It depends who you are for that tough pool, I would say. Because
if you're Italy, you're in the toughest pool.
Yeah, exactly. If you're Italy or USA...
Yeah, I mean, tier one nation, I think it was. You've got the two best other teams.
Yeah.
So that pool is definitely harder. For England, I think I would rather play? No, I would rather have just one other tier one nation.
Yeah.
Rather than have those two. So, it's fair to say that they're. But, you know, England looked clearly better than Argentina to the point that they didn't really bother them.
An Argentina team that pushed France very, very close.
Which in turn pushed Wales very, very close, who in turn beat England. So there we go.
Wales the best team in the world.
Wales the best team in the world. Yeah. Let's just call the World Cup off now.
So, relatively briefly then, we'll do it more in depth later in the week. Let's go backwards. Sunday, the two teams we've just been talking about, Wales and South Africa. As I say, I think defensively it's going to be huge. I think there'll be a massive amount of kicking. It'll be attritional as you like. Who will come out? I think that plays right into Wales' hands. I think they're going to get through.
I think exactly the same, but I don't think they'll get through. I think they'll lose. It's going to be heartbreak. I think it's going to be so close and then heartbreak. So I have to go through.
I was watching that game, the Welsh game, thinking if they do this, if they get through, they are going to struggle because they don't have the depth that South Africa, England, New Zealand, the other three semi-finalists do. They cannot bring a world-class tight five off the bench.
Nope.
Or even, they can't bring them from anywhere.
I'm not even sure
they don't have a first-choice world-class tight five.
Do they have a sixth... I don't know, who'd be my sixth best tight five player in Wales? Elliot D from the Dragons? I got no idea.
Yeah, so...
Rhys Carey?
So, I was watching that game, and it was bloody physical against France. And there were boys like Wainwright got strapped up. Those boys going off. There's Hadley Park, we've already spoken about, but Bigger took a few hits. only a week after having a sickening knockout.
He's fine.
His second of the tournament.
Stop asking questions, fine. Tim. Stop it, Tim.
We've spoke about this. He's fine.
I trust that he's fine and he played bloody well. But
he did.
He is right now only one big hit away from not playing again in the tournament.
And if there's one team you're going to get a big hit against.
Yes. So I was just thinking this game, while it will play into Wales's strengths if they were at full fitness and full strength, I just cannot see them doing it. No. And I cannot see... When South Africa bring Marks, Kitsoff, Kok, Mostert and Snyman off the bench! after 50 minutes.
Do you know what would be my dream? My dream would be, yes, Wales are going through and it'd be great. We'd see this wild French team go up against France.
French team go up against South Africa.
Sorry, against South Africa. My word, what a clash of worlds that would have been.
I'd love to see Camille Schat and Malcolm Marks.
Oh, just wrestling.
Oh my word. Schat is in some shape, isn't
Both
he?
Both of those boys.
Both those guys are in incredible shape.
No, I'm sure Mr. Schat has done everything perfectly above board to get in such shape. I'm positive he has. Otherwise, he wouldn't be playing world rugby. That said, I would look at Camille Schat in the same way I would look at at Donald Trump's tax returns, which is with deep, deep suspicion. You know, like when you see people,
it's inhuman, isn't it?
Yeah. Like maybe we want to have a chat here. Maybe we should just do a bit of testing, see what's going on.
It looks like something out of a Marvel comic, or
yeah. But like I say, I am 100% certain that is not the case. Yeah. I'm just saying, if I was going to look, that's where I would look. Yeah. In the same way, if I looked for tax evasion, I'd go to the Cayman Islands.
Same sort of thing. It's a lot of good work he's put in. The difference I think is that, as you mentioned, Phil, South Africa are a very blunt instrument. They don't offload a lot. They have incredible men in wide positions, but since before the tournament, I've just had this feeling about Wales.
Do you know what would fill my heart with joy? If South Africa win it, because let's just say that they beat Wales, South Africa go on to the final, and they beat the All Blacks. Because for all the talk of how important skill is and how we need to be teaching kids a different type of rugby,
just massive, brutal, men.
What you really need is four Ebenezerbeths and some big front rows. That would fill my heart with joy. Because it would just be like a massive custard pie into the face of all the people. It's about skills. No, it's not. It's about beating people up and bullying people.
Steamrolling and being alpha mailing it over every
bullying
other nation.
Rubbing people's face in the dirt after you tackled them. That's what I want to see.
It's about barbecuing, having a braai with beef
beers.
Four times a day.
Just being obnoxious and horrible.
Speaking of which, there might be some stories that come out after the World Cup. Anyway,
England, South Africa would probably do it for me.
Mm.
England, South Africa would be a very good final. New Zealand, South Africa would be a very good
final. My heart's saying I really want Wales to win. I picked South Africa before the World Cup to win it. I think they probably will do it, but I've just got this feeling about Wales. What do you reckon, Phil?
Give me South Africa by 10 points.
Mm. I'm with you, Tim, except for the result. Close with South Africa win.
We can get into this more. I'll see when the teams. If JD's in the side, then maybe that
JD
changes
will
thing.
Be a big boost. Yeah.
So would another massive second row and a ball carrier. There must be a ball carrier in Wales available on the weekend.
Yeah, because they try and use George North, but he is
not the same George North as a few years ago.
He has not been particularly good. Not been particularly effective.
How bad was Falatel's shoulder? It must be fixed by now.
Yeah, come on. Sort yourself out. Right, and the other semi-final. I think the Kamikaze kids are going to... they could do a number on New Zealand.
Can I just talk about one... Oh, no, I'm not going to talk about Muffy. I wanted to talk about Muffy because Phil sent an article relating to what he's been accused of. Have you heard this?
We did cover this on a podcast.
Anamaki Muffy.
Yeah, we covered this on a podcast. It's at least 18 months old.
Yeah, look at the article yourself. It's a fascinating story.
There are other alleged things which haven't not about him I'm talking about, but there are other alleged things about players.
What are you hinting at here, Tim?
Let's just move on to
let's,
the...
Let's move on.
Is it a South African player?
No, I can't. That's not what I'm talking about at all.
No. Although there are some allegations there. But no, let's move
on. God damn it. Right, fine. The other one.
Move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
All right. I think the Kamikaze kids are going to do a job, and I think Owen Farrell's going to bring it home.
I think England gets smashed by about 20 points. I think it's going to be a very, very hard, harsh reality check.
The Kamikaze kids matching up against Kane and Surveyor.
I know,
because those two are bloody good players. I mean, Surveyor is some athlete.
Surveyor just seems to get better every game he plays.
Yeah.
More and more influential.
Taller and taller hair.
Yep.
Yeah.
Second rows, again, I said...
Brody Retallick coming back.
Goodness me.
Doesn't look like he's not played for 3 months.
Oh, the matchup's all over. Marrow, this is your test as well. Kamikaze Kids, this is your test. Marrow, this is your test.
Yep.
Billy, come on. Back to form, this is your test. Owen Farrell on... Bowden Barrett and Mwanga, come on, you got
Mwanga
this.
Mwanga, yeah. It's probably better than Farrell, but not as good as Ford, I would guess.
The biggest worry, like, so we can get into this more later in the week, but is there any argument whatsoever for, say, Noel on the right wing and Watson at fullback?
Possibly, given...
Yeah.
So there's definitely an argument for it. Definitely.
Is there an argument to get rid of Daly? Because he is a definite weakness.
Well, that's the only other fullback option, really, isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That is.
Does that mean Daly goes on the wing? Because he is important.
You could do that.
If May's injured, maybe that's how you rejig things.
Possibly.
Rather than Cock and the Singer.
I mean.
Or McConaughey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a question mark over Noel's fitness.
Yeah.
It does seem a little bit. A bit of a luxury, actually, to have Cock and the Singer and. What's his name?
McConaughey.
When actually they've only used May and Watson so far. I mean, they've used them in important games.
Yeah, McConaughey played the USA game.
Yeah.
McConaughey and Thockenessinger played the USA game.
You could have an extra second row.
McConaughey was named to play one and then pulled out and then played the next one.
Yeah, you're right. It was. Yeah, it was.
I did always wonder, was McConaughey there? Is he expendable just in case one of Genge or Marla goes down before Mako is back fit, so he can be sent home for compassionate reasons.
Oh crikey!
To bring in,
I thought it meant like expendable, like as if you know, in case they got into a bar fight, like they threw McConaughey in the way and they get out.
Run!
Throw him in the way. Let's hold them
off, McConaughey.
By the way, on that, just very briefly. Can anybody explain why I'm supposed to be upset or give a damn about Thomas Ramos going home and then playing a week later?
Because it's outrageous, Tim.
Is it absolutely outrageous? Is it?
Of course it is.
I think it shows,
it outrageous? What's the outrage part?
I'm not outraged.
I'm outraged.
I just find it absolutely hilarious. It's just a great example of like. The French left hand and right hand have got no idea what they are doing.
Oh no, totally.
Which is outrageous, right?
I completely agree. I completely agree with that. No, okay. So the element is, it's not outrageous. There's a lot of, and I describe them on Twitter as bedwetters. There's a lot of bedwetters on Twitter.
Oh, isn't there? Just...
Getting incredibly outraged, saying this is World Rugby. You need to do something. This is an outrage because Thomas Ramos got sent home.
No.
And then played a week later for...
There is two types of outrage, okay?
To lose.
The outrage that you've got in your mind is like using the wrong pronouns kind of outrage, like hysterical outrage which you can't control. The other type of outrage is us doing a podcast and me forgetting to press record. That is outrageous. It is outrageous, right? Thomas Ramos got picked for a World Cup and was sent home injured only to play for Toulouse the week after.
Yeah, so
that is outrageously stupid.
But there are bedwetters on Twitter thinking that this is some sort of conspiracy and they've done it to get Rates in.
Ooh.
Like, they wanted to get rid of Ramos and so this is how they've done it, by cheating. No, Jacques Brunel, just as you said, the medical team have said one thing and got it completely wrong.
And what a conspiracy too. during the group stages, we 100% need Thomas Ramos. But in the knockouts, if we don't have Rattes on the bench, my word, what will we do next?
Exactly. So exactly as Phil said, I put it down. The outrage is, how can France be so useless?
Yes.
It is. That's exactly just
not it's not that someone's cheated.
Yeah. It is as outrageous as not putting anyone at number 8 on
attacking
scrum in the World Cup
or elbowing someone in the head.
Again, on your attacking ball in the opposition's 22.
So, bedwetters, wet your bed about the right thing.
Oh, my God. That's a great ending. Well done, Tim.
Right, let's leave it there.
Buy some razors at Cornerstone. That's very important. Buy some rugby shirts at Akuma Shop. We've not spoken about them. We've had so much rugby talk.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll tell you about all our partners and how you can support the podcast on our Premiership pod, which we will have in the feed as well. So, hit subscribe. And I think I'm going to say it again so that we end on this point. Bedwetters, wet your bed about the right thing.
No, it's a great weekend of rugby. Let's celebrate rugby.
I'm bedwetting. Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.